to episode 375 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. And this is a Superman Sunday episode. Today we're going to be talking about Man of Steel number 4. Give the creative team real quick. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis. We've got pencils on this issue by Kevin Maguire. Actually, he does pencils and inks. He's inking his own stuff here. And then, of course, we have a couple of pages by Jason Fabek with colors by Alex Sinclair. I do also want to point out that it's Yvonne Reese, Joe Prado, and Sinclair on the cover, because I really like this cover of Superman and Lois. Clark and Lois? I don't know. He's got his shirt on, but his glasses are off, but his shirt is unbuttoned, so you can see the symbol. He's in transition, let's say. So anyway, before we dive into the issue, let me ask you, Manny, since you haven't been on any of the Superman Sunday episodes, what do you think of Bendis' take on the Man of Steel?
Oh, okay, so I had to labor through the first four issues. I mean, like, this is terrible. Compared to the action and the Superman that we were getting with the Rebirth relaunch, it gets me back to not wanting to read Superman again. I don't know. It feels like he's trying to like do something with this new bad guy. It seems like some sort of weird cross between like Zod and a Doomsday, and like I don't get the motives very well. It doesn't feel like anything special. It just feels like another arc that I just want to get through.
So what's it missing that was in Jurgens and Gleason and Tomasi's run that all of a sudden, I mean, because Nick and I, we read the first issue, we kind of liked the fact that Superman was kind of all seen in Metropolis, you know, and he was showing different ways of using the powers. None of that spoke to you at all. You were just like,
well that part was cool, but kind of like that kind of just, you know, hey, it's Superman. But once you really get down to to this new bad guy, and then I don't know what the hell was up with them, like overhyping the arrival of his dad again. Once he showed up again, I was like, "Oh, it's just his dad." I don't know. And then, especially issue 4,
go ahead. It's fine. We'll get there.
We'll get to issue 4 in a minute. But just overall, I'm just like really, really underwhelmed. And I'm telling you, to get through the 4 issues when I read them on Friday, It was labor.
I feel like these aren't really very hard issues to read. They're relatively quick reads. And I don't know, maybe because you read it as a chunk, you didn't feel the buildup. But let's go through the issue, then we'll talk about it in more detail. So this is the first one that doesn't open with the planet on the splash page. We'll actually get what I guess a Superman's eye with Rogal Zar reflected in it. So you're still getting that same like circular image to start. And it's him and Supergirl. They're fighting against Rogal Zar. And it's a pretty pitched battle going back and forth. I do like the Maguire art. It's very traditional comic book art. I think the coloring by Sinclair has been solid throughout. I've mentioned before that it's very much classic a classic comic book color palette. So it suits Maguire's colors perfectly. There are other artists that have been on the book where it hasn't suited it quite as well, but it's perfect for Maguire's art. So the other thing that's interesting is that, and there's some really awesome images during this battle in Metropolis. So there's not a whole lot to say other than they're fighting, right? And it's a lot of, you know, action scenes. I don't think I need to go panel by any means. But Superman is worried about Supergirl at times. You know, they're fighting together. And at one point, Rogal Zar seems to be hiding, and it's 2-on-1, but he seems to more than hold his own. But what's interesting is halfway in the middle of the battle, Superman kind of gets knocked, like, across Metropolis. And that sequence, there's a short, I think it's maybe 8 or 12 page story that ends. It's the final story in Action Comics 1000. That story actually fits in the middle of this issue. So if you want to read it, like, in perfect chronological order, you would read the first half of this issue. You would go and you'd read that story, that 8-pager or 12-pager, whatever it is, in Action Comics 1000. And then you would come back and read the final half of this issue. And then it would line up perfectly. So, but in what we do get in the middle of this issue, as Manny alluded to, is the Jason Fabok pages, right? And we've been seeing this play throughout. I've talked before about Brian Michael Bendis and his decompressed storytelling style, where he, you know, like, I always go back to that Ultimate Spider-Man first 6 issues, telling the origin of Spider-Man. It took Bendis 6 issues to tell the story that Stan Lee and Steve Ditko told in, like, one 20-page story in Amazing Fantasy. It might have even been a 12 or 18-page story. But, you know, they got to the point, and you understood it. It took Bendis 6 issues to tell that same story. So it's definitely – and I'm not saying one's better than the other, but it's definitely a different style of storytelling, right? So we've seen throughout the Man of Steel series so far – you know, Lois and Clark and John saying the same things. Clark, Lois, get behind me. Dad, what is it? And just repeating those phrases over and over. And we've been getting these pages from Jason Fabok showing us kind of the same event happening from different angles. And each time, each issue, we're getting a little more detail. So finally, with issue 4, you know, we see the ship show up. We see the green legs. We see the language that's happened, throughout every issue. And as Manny said, it's Jor-El. That's who it is. Like, you know, Nick and I had speculated on who it might be with the green pants, you know, with that, green, you think kryptonite, but also you think Brainiac when you think green, possibly. You think possibly Lex Luthor with his battle suit. But we really weren't sure. None of us, neither one of us, thought Jor-El. But again, I think that Manny missed out on the buildup because he read it all in one big, one big chunk. So, there was some suspense built up and there was some mystery built up, by reading it, you know, once a week. And just having more time to think about it, like right from the first issue, Lois and John aren't there and you're wondering, okay, where are they? The second issue, it's really obvious. We've got the moment when Green Lantern tries to talk to Superman, asks him if everything's okay. Superman kind of runs away. Clearly, he's you know, feeling a bit overwhelmed by what's going on. I had speculated that I just didn't think Superman would be hanging around Earth if Lois and John were somewhere and he didn't know where they were. They were captured by somebody. He would be out there trying to find them. So this kind of makes sense, you know. If he knows that they're with Jor-El somewhere, and he has to let him go for whatever reason, I mean, we don't know yet. It's yet to be determined. But that does make some sense. Like, okay, he had to let him go, so he kind of knows where they are and who they're with, but he still misses them. So that does make sense. I still feel like part of the reason and the impetus for Bendis doing this is he wants to be able to tell Superman stories with Lois and John kind of off the table, because he wants to be able to tell stories without that encumbrance. So again, I don't necessarily agree with that. He wanted to write Superman, and this is Superman now. He's got Lois, he's got John, and I think Manny would agree with this, and Nick and I for sure, is that what Dan Jurgens has been doing in Action Comics previously, and what Tomasi and Gleason were doing in Superman title, sales were great. Superman's been great since Rebirth started, so I hope Bendis doesn't come in and upset the apple cart too much. I still am not 100% sure that I like what he's doing here. There are some great moments, but I don't know. I think it's yet to be determined, and it may be one of those things where we don't know for, you know, 6 months to a year, as we kind of look back on it and absorb what Bendis is doing. So getting back into the what happened in the issue, as I said, you had that Action Comics story that fits in the middle of this, and then as we get back to the main narrative in this one, we see Green Lantern show up, and he's kind of following Superman's trail. He talks to the women in, I think it's a flower shop that Superman crashed into, and they give their side of the story. And then we see Cal kind of wake up, and Green Lantern has him in a bubble, and he's like, "Oh man, you know, civilian said the second before I showed up, you know, you're fighting with this guy, and you know, scan the area, can't find him." He said something about cleansing, and then we see that Rogal Zar, we thought was, I mean, it looked like at the end of that Action Comic story that he stabbed Superman, but apparently that wasn't actually what happened. But he did mention the cleansing. So Superman returns to his Fortress of Solitude. He's still pretty bent out of shape about the Kandor being destroyed, and Rogal Zar indeed is there. And then Superman sets off his super flare power, and it's going to be continued next week in Man of Steel. So we know when he does set off that super flare power that he basically is powerless for a certain period of time. So certainly hope that it took out Rogal Zar, or at least bought him some time. Because Rogal Zar seems to believe that Kryptonians don't deserve to live. That's basically his motivation. What's necessarily behind that, or his hatred for them, don't really know. There's only two issues left to go. So it may be something that we don't learn in this series. Nick and I had speculated last time that issue 5 might be an origin story for Rogal Zar. But then we remembered that issue 6 is all about the Jason Fabot part of the story. So I don't really see how there's enough room left in the story, which makes me think that there's going to be more to this story. It's not like Burns Man of Steel, and this is what I was thinking about the other night. It's not like Burns Man of Steel, where he came in, he said Man of Steel, the 6-issue miniseries, is the origin. And then when I finally start telling Superman stories, it actually comes later, right? So you can think of the Man of Steel issues happening, that series happening in like 1986. And then when you actually start telling the Superman stories, it's a number of years later after he's already been on the scene and everyone's familiar with him. This Man of Steel, I kind of thought that's what this was going to be. It was going to be kind of Bendis's take on Superman, but to your point earlier, Manny, it's kind of like, yeah, this is just another arc. It just so happens to be Brian Michael Bendis writing it. So I'm not sure why they needed to do this weekly event of Man of Steel. They just as easily could have been like, okay, here's Action Comics 1000, and then here's the first arc of Brian Michael Bendis' story. It's a Rogal Zar story. And if they wanted to, they could have had it bounce between Action Comics and Superman. So you had one each week, right? Because they both come out twice a month. It still would have been weekly, and it could have bounced back and forth between the two. Like, I don't really understand why you needed to say, okay, stop printing Action Comics, stop printing Superman, and do this Man of Steel. Because, I don't know, I mean, it's like, if you were to jump on this as a new reader, it's not like it's super new reader friendly. It's not like you have to know a whole lot either. I mean, it's kind of somewhere in the middle. He has given us some interesting Superman moments with the powers and everything, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. I go back and forth. Like, I think some of the things he's done are really, really cool, and other things I think are kind of missing the mark. And I really don't care for although some of the artists have, for the most part, all the artists actually have been really, really great, but having a different artist on each issue is kind of annoying. So I don't know. I'm sorry that you missed out on the suspenseful buildup, because it was, I mean, I read this Sunday night when I was in Denver. Nick and I both read it at the same time, and we both, like, when we saw it was Jor-El, we were both like, whoa. That was a cool moment. And you kind of missed out on that because you were, like I said, you read it all in one chunk.
No, I think I would have the same reaction.
Yeah, and in the interest of full disclosure, I've read issue 5 already. And yeah, I still, it doesn't necessarily change my perception of the story. It's still very much a wait and see kind of thing. And then based on the solicitations for where we know the story goes, like, obviously we don't know, I don't know what happens in issue 6. I haven't read issue 6 yet, but read issue 5. We'll be talking about that on next week's Superman Sunday, but yeah, again, it's not going to get wrapped up in this 6-issue series. And based on what I know from issue 5 and what I've seen from solicitations for, like, action, I think it's Action Comics that's going to continue the tale of this. It's like, okay, yeah, I could see where you're still telling the story. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I don't care for the villain at all. We did talk on the podcast, Nick and I, about the fact that just like Snyder did with Court of Owls, where he went back and said, oh, the Court of Owls have always been in Gotham and Batman just never noticed. And, you know, I think Scott Snyder's a great writer and I was willing to accept that, but still on some level it bugged me, right? Like, here's the world's greatest detective and there's been this secret owl club or whatever you want to call it, society, working behind the scenes all this time. The world's greatest detective never found out till recently. And now you're telling me, oh, there's this secret aspect of Krypton blowing up that Superman hasn't known about for 75 years. It just, I understand new writers want to bring in new things, but it, like, logically, it doesn't make sense. He would have known something before now, I feel like. So yeah, it's not a great villain. And the name's stupid too. I'm sorry. I know that Brian Michael Bendis, yes, he had a medical thing and he almost died and he wanted to use his doctor's name for the villain. I get that. That's kind of a cool thing. But I mean, I don't know if her name was Rogal or if her name was Czar, but I don't know. It just doesn't sound good. You know, it doesn't strike fear. It's not like, you know, like Doomsday or Zod. Or, you know, it's nothing special. So, I don't know. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, never pair Kevin Maguire with Jason Fabok again, because that is one hell of a jump. Especially in facial features, those two do not match at all. I don't know if you can tell, going from the panel where Superman's dad shows up to the next panel, to the next page with Green Lantern, there's just this difference in facial features that was, like, jarringly distracting to me. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed all along that some of the artists, like with Yvonne Reese and Jason Fabok, it's not that big of a jump.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
With Evan Doc Shaner, yeah, the style's pretty different. And then you go from Doc Shaner to Jason Fabok to Steve Rude, who I feel turns in the weakest art of the series, just because I don't think Steve Rude should ever ink himself. He's not doing himself any favors. And so, yeah, that was a really, yeah, it just didn't really look good. The last one, which was, it was Ryan Sook. Again, it's a different style, but Sook does have more detail than Kevin Maguire. Kevin Maguire's art is very, very clean. It's more similar to Evan Shaner's than Sook. So yeah, you're kind of going up and down. With the detail that people put in, you know, Fabok is very detailed. So it's not, I don't think, like I said, I don't think DC did themselves any favors by setting it up the way they did.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's the thing that really bugged me, because we were supposed to record this on Friday, so I had a lot of time to think about it, is that, you know, this is, besides the Action 1000, this is the, this was the coming out of Brian Michael Bendis. And I mean, I don't think that the best decision was made to introduce a new character for him. I mean, I completely agree with you. Well, they should have gone back and maybe done like a early Superman Lex story, or like, you know, pick anybody else from his Rogues gallery. But to kind of do that, and then you're gonna put in, you know, something happened with Kandor, and then we're going to have cameos from Green Lantern and Supergirl, and so his dad shows up, and you have a Guardian. And I mean, there's just like so much noise that I kind of lost the story because there's so much going on. And for an introduction of you know, supposed like rock star writer, I would have liked to see something a little bit more clear. And if you're going to have different artists, let them do the entire book. Like, it all feels like they put it together at the last second. And obviously they didn't.
Well, in fairness, just to play devil's advocate, I think that the illness that Brian Michael Bendis had, the infection, I mean, it almost killed him. Certainly don't want to pile on. But I think it probably kind of threw things off. And delayed things, and may have been part of the reason they had to put it together this way with multiple artists in order to get it done in time. But I do tend to agree with you. Like, there's no reason that Brian Michael Bendis couldn't still tell this story, right? I have no problem with the story, and there are aspects that are interesting about it. But here's the problem, right? You're trying to have these cool Superman moments in this story that's, like Manny said, very busy, right? Like, we've got the whole Melody Moore, Deputy Chief, you know, fire person. Too, yeah. We've got the new reporter at the Daily Planet. We've got Green Lantern showing up a couple times. We got Supergirl. We got Rogel Zar. We got the thing with Lois and John. And yeah, it's a lot. And it's not giving Bendis a chance to really, like, I don't understand. Like, what's your take on the character? Is it those little character moments? Or is it just you see Superman as the main character in a larger cast of characters? I mean, that kind of seems like what it is to me, which is fine. I have no problem with that. Those are some of, you know, my favorite Superman stories. He should have a large ensemble cast. And I think in the 90s, that's what he had in the Triangle era, when it went from, you know, one book to the, you know, with the same story to a different book, that, you know, the following week. And you followed it by the triangle numbers on the cover. And it was great. It's one of my favorite eras. But again, you, to Manny's point, what you could have done, and you could have taken a page out of what Byrne did in that original six issue Man of Steel series, right? Like, it was six issues, and they weren't like telling one story. It was one narrative, but they kind of jumped in forward in time, right? So there's no reason Bendis couldn't have done that here. He could have done, you know, a six issue series, and the first one could have been, hey, look, here's Superman landing on Earth. You know, we all know the origin story, but let's let Bendis take a crack at it, right? Let's see, you know, maybe through the course of the first issue, he lands on Earth, and by the end of the first issue, he's done with high school or something like that. And then you could add an issue that dealt with, you know, college or whatever. But what I'm saying is, there's no reason that he couldn't have told a story in the past. Maybe just have your six-issue story, and it's just him showing up in Metropolis for the first time. Like, what's Bendis' take on that? I would be interested in that, right? And then when he's ready to tell, you know, when we kind of have an understanding of who Superman is to Bendis and his take on him, with all those cool character moments that we had in this story, he could have put in that story. Now come to present time, right? Now move to current DC continuity time, and then tell the story of Rogel Zar, because then you can give that story your full attention, and you don't have to worry about using space on the on this John and Lois subplot. You don't have to worry about giving space to these Superman moments or how he feels about Candor. You know, none of that stuff. You could have, I don't know. I just think it could have been handled a little better.
I mean, you could have even, if you're going to go back in time and started from when he landed on Earth, you could have still added in those moments for the new character, because you practically did that here and built it up to present time. But the fact that you tried to jam all that stuff in the past and then, you know, by the way, here's new person and whatever, it was a little much. And it just seems like it could have been like just another arc in action. And it feels like, with the way this ended, and I know you already read 5 and I haven't taken a look at it, so I can't say anything. It just feels like it's going to be one of those, you know, we'll meet again, Superman, and like we'll see him sometime in the future.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, with the solicitations, we know, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody if you haven't read it. But something happens and Superman is still trying to deal with the after effects. So it just shows that basically this story that's happening is happening in real time, as far as like the Superman books are concerned, where it fits in with the rest of what's going on in Justice League and Doomsday Clock and all that, you know, not really sure. But yeah, I think they would have been better served giving Bendis a chance to really go back and give us some like his take on an earlier part of Superman, just so we again could understand who Superman is to Bendis, rather than doing it in this. Because I don't know. I mean, to me, he doesn't feel in tone like he did in Tomasi and Gleason's run or in Juergen's run. Which is fine. It's a different writer. It's different. So, you know, it makes sense that it would feel like a different tone. But having read all that stuff and having been completely caught up with Superman, to go from those to this and then, you know, back to action and Superman, I don't know. It feels different. And maybe that's why they did it the way they did it, right? Maybe that's why they said, okay, we need to have a break from action and Superman because this is so tonally different. Maybe that's why they decided to do it.
So it just makes me wonder what we're going to do going forward. How much involvement is Lois and Jonathan going to have going forward? Because, I mean, Juergens and Tomasi and those guys spent so much time, like, you know, like building this world of Superman that I loved, because I wasn't reading Superman until Rebirth. And it gave me a little worried going forward, because it's like, I know you guys got Bendis and I know that he wanted Superman, but Juergens has been doing fine.
I agree. But I mean, what are you going to kick Tom King off Batman? You know what I mean? It's just so many times they've tried to get Bendis and he was finally ready to come over, and it's like, yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think that a lot of people are feeling the way that you're feeling, right? And I went on and on about it the first couple Superman Sundays about, like, I am not okay if he, you know, if he erases the marriage and John disappears. I am not okay with that. And it seems like bringing Jor-El in is maybe a way to, like, circumvent, because again, I feel like, okay, Bendis is like, I want to tell stories of Superman flirting with the deputy fire chief, so I have to get low, you know. And it just, that bugged me, you know. I talked about it in the first Superman Sunday episode. He seemed like he was flirting, and that just bugged me. Not that he needs to be perfect or needs to be a Boy Scout, but it didn't feel authentic to me, right? Same reason I didn't like the Man of Steel movie. It didn't feel authentic. So and certainly if his wife and son are missing, he's not gonna be out there flirting with somebody. And we saw more of that. I mean, I felt better about it after issue 2 because we saw that it was affecting him. But yeah, I'm definitely ready for answers to that, because even though I've read issue 5, I don't have the answers. I haven't found out where they are or what's going on. I think we're gonna get that in issue 6. But yeah, based on what happens in 5, not to jump too far ahead, but based on what happens in 5, I'm as confused as ever, honestly. But to get back to 4, I think overall it's a solid issue. There's nothing wrong with it, like graphically, you know, art wise. I think McGuire does a great job. As Manny mentions, it and we talked about the, you know, having this different artists maybe wasn't the best choice, but again, I think they were probably forced into that just based on a timing thing. But I'd have no problem with seeing McGuire on a Superman book on a regular basis. I think he handles the storytelling and the action really, really well. I'm still a fan of his artwork, and great job during the fight scenes too to keep it interesting. And there's a couple panels. There's one where Rogal Zar like fires a beam of energy from his staff and hits Superman. That's really, really awesome looking. So, yeah, great job by the art team. So yeah, it's just a matter. And again, it's not even that it's a bad story. It just, I feel like the pacing is a little bit off just based on how much Bendis is trying to stick in the story, which is interesting in and of itself, right? Because we talk about the whole decompressed storyline and decompressed storytelling style of Bendis, but in a way it is moving slow, but at the same time he's sticking in a lot of stuff, and so you could maybe look at it both ways, right? Like, not a lot is happening, but it's because there are so many threads. So you can only get so much movement and forward momentum of the story based on how much is in there. Although I will say that issue 4 is a more focused issue than the previous issues. I mean, it's pretty much all like Superman, Rogal Zar. You know, we don't get any of the stuff with the fires in Metropolis. We don't get any of the daily. We've hardly gotten any of the Daily Planet stuff. Since like the first issue or maybe the DC Nation stuff. And obviously every issue's had some of the Fabox stuff, which if you remember, Manny, he told us that he was going to have a couple pages in each issue. And then the final issue was all him focusing on that, on that storyline. He told us that at WonderCon. So yeah, I'm not really sure. I think that a lot of the threads that Bendis introduced in this series are going to continue to be threads. It's not like, okay, this is Bendis telling us the story of the fires and the fire chief and the Daily Planet and the new reporter and Rogal Zar and the destruction of Krypton and Lois and John and where they went, and the destruction of Kandor, if you want to throw that one in. So this is not like, okay, Bendis is telling us these 5 story threads, and we're going to get at least the majority of them, you know, 2, 3, 4 of them resolved in this. I don't think we're going to get any of them resolved in this 6-issue miniseries. Because I think, if anything, it's going to end, as you said, with Rogal Zar saying, "We'll meet again, Superman. You may have won this battle, but you haven't won the war." I can easily see, you know, something like that going down. And then the titles, Action Comics and Superman coming back, with Bendis just continuing to pick up the threads that he started in this series. So again, I just feel like I can kind of understand why they did it this way. If they did want to make a break from Action and Superman, because it is so different tonally. But I've been talking about this a lot on the podcast recently. You got to give the readers some payoff in order to get them to keep reading. You can't just, you know, leave all the threads dangling. So I don't know. It'd be interesting, especially having read it all in one chunk and not really liking it that much for it, you know, all 4 issues. So again, some of the things that made it work, like the suspense of building up, like, okay, who is this person that's coming to disrupt the lives of Clark and Lois and John? Part of the reason that worked so well was because there was, you know, we did get just such a little bit of it each week, but you got it all in one chunk and it didn't work for you. So it's going to be interesting. Like, how's this going to read in the trade, right? And to go back to the art, I'm never a fan when art changes in the middle of a trade. I think that was probably the main thing I didn't like about the Batman Eternal storyline. Some of the art and that's fantastic, right? Jason Fabok art. And some of it, there were a few issues there where I almost threw it, man. It was like, I remember flipping back to see who the artist was, being like, who is this? Who did the art on this? Because it's pretty awful. And going and looking and being like, I have never heard of this person before in my life. And you let them draw a Batman comic. I understand it's weekly, a weekly book, and you probably were stuck and needed somebody. But, whoo boy, pretty rough at times. So, thank goodness that hasn't been the case with Man of Steel at all. All the artists are well known. They're all, you know, super talented. It's just that their styles don't always mesh together. And now you're going to have, you know, six, seven, eight different styles all in one trade. I just don't know how it's going to read. So I don't know. Maybe Bendis will knock it out of the park with issue six. It will be all Fabok art in issue six. So that definitely is a positive. And maybe he'll surprise me and wrap up more of the story than I expect. So 2 weeks away. We'll be talking about it, Superman Sunday in a couple weeks on the 3rd, but less than a week until I actually get to read it with the preview copy. So let us know what you think. You know, send us an email, shoot us a message on Twitter. Tell us if you're loving Bendis's work on Man of Steel or not. Based on what Bendis says on Twitter, he's been getting a lot of love. So
never roll my eyes.
So I guess we'll see. Anything else to add about Man of Steel number 4, Manny?
The cover's great, colors are amazing, and Fabok's awesome as always. But I'm gonna get through it just so I am really curious to see where he's going with all of this.
Yeah, and I have some other thoughts about Kandor too, but I'm going to save them for next time. So, well, once again, we want to thank you all for joining us. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. All the episodes are also available on iTunes and Stitcher. And if you really want to help us out, you can give us some reviews on those two places. Reviews, especially 5-star reviews, really, really help us out. So we appreciate that. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all of our convention coverage. Quick reminder, I'll be at the amazing Las Vegas convention this coming weekend, June 29th and 30th in Las Vegas, Nevada. So if you're going to be there, let me know. Be happy to meet up, hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. And then, of course, the mother of all shows coming up in July. And I think this year it's on, I think preview night is the 18th. And then the show runs the 19th through the 22nd. That's San Diego Comic-Con, San Diego, California. I'm getting tired just thinking about it. Tired but excited. Can't wait to go into San Diego and generate a lot of content. And I've already had a few publishers reaching out to me, wanting to see what my plans are for the show. So we'll try to bring you as many interviews as we can, as always. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.